Going Linux, episode 229. Dual booting, the advanced episode. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, dual booting, advanced. Okay, go for it, Bill. I know you're itching. Tell me. Do you have any news from the week?
Oh, let's see. Yeah. Droid.
So you got a new phone.
Yes. I officially retired the malfunctioning, power draining iPhone that stopped working. So
what? An Apple device actually stopped working?
Yeah.
Is that possible?
It was, and it did.
Oh, okay.
So, I went to the Verizon store, and I said, I am not going to get another Apple device. I said, I want an Android device. Look at all the pretty new shiny toys. Of course, the salesman kept trying to sell me an Apple device. And I'm like, no, don't want an Apple device. I want an Android. Actually, I want the Motorola. You know, Google owns Motorola Mobility now, so I figured, hey, good thing. So, looking around and fell in love with the Droid Max. Then the lady kept trying to sell me the iPhone 5S, then the 5C, and I think I broke her heart when I said, nah, I'll take the Droid Max.
Well, you know, the first rule of selling is listen to your customer and sell them what they want.
Well, no, she tried to sell me everything but the Droid Max. Now, the Droid Max has a bigger battery, a 3,500 milliamp battery. It's 48 hours standby. The battery life is just incredible. I used it, I got up at 4 a.m. the day before, actually Saturday, and didn't get home till almost 2 o'clock in the morning, and I still had 35% of the battery. So. Yeah, so it just kept on and going. And Google gave me 50 gigabytes on their Google Drive for 2 years because I bought their phone.
That's nice.
Yeah, so I got 65 gigs of storage space. It's fast. It is blazingly fast. And I just can't tell you how much I like it. Of course, the poor people on Google Plus are probably sick of hearing that, but, you know, it's like, wow, this thing actually works fast. And it's, you know, my old phone wasn't an LTE phone, and so it was like a huge technology just jump. But, it's really, a really, nice phone. And so Bill says stay away from Apple devices. buy an Android.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah. Played with my computer again and didn't like how I had it set up, so I wiped everything and reinstalled it. So now I'm just running Windows on my main drive, of course, because I still have programs that need awful Windows. And then I'm running PC Linux OS 64-bit edition, running super steady, runs great. So I've got the best of both worlds. Okay. New phone, new Linux, everything's running great. It's time for me to break some.
Well, I have to say, for a distro hopper, you seem to be going back to PC Linux OS a lot.
I like them. I like them a lot. And the funny thing is, I really don't like the KDE that much, but for some reason, I like how they do their KDE. I like the community. And just everything about it, they put out a little, they call it a magazine, it's a little PDF with, how to do stuff. But I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Mint 16. Problems?
Pull the knife out. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, pull it out. Okay, so tell me about your Mint 16 issues and okay. how you solved them.
All right, so first of all, I was on Mint 15 on my, let me give you a review of what my hardware is, because it may be, you know, your experience may be different depending on your hardware. So I have about, 2.5, 3-year-old Pavilion, HP Pavilion DM4 laptop, right? So it's a 14-inch screen, and it's nice and light and portable, and Mint 15 worked perfectly on it. And the reason I wanted to upgrade was, first of all, I like to be on the version of Linux Mint that most new people will be tending towards. So if I'm moving over from Windows as a first-time Linux user, and I've listened to this guy on Going Linux called Larry Bushy, and he keeps talking about Mint, I'm going to try Mint, and I'm going to try... I don't know what LTS is, so I'm going to try whatever the latest version is. So I figure new people are going to be trying Mint 16 at this point in time. So then I also wanted to experience Cinnamon 2.0, and I didn't want to put it on Mint 15. I just didn't want to go look at the backport, because I thought, well, there may be some things that are different in 16 that aren't the same in 15. So I want to get the full experience of what Mint is, the latest Mint is with Cinnamon 2.0 on it. So those two reasons drove me to upgrade. Plus, I like to be on the bleeding edge of things. And bleeding is what I'm doing right now. So with that background, first of all, Cinnamon 2.0, fantabulous. You know, in previous versions, they had a control panel that was split between the GNOME control panel and the Cinnamon control panel. So depending on where you were or what setting you wanted to switch, you needed to go one place or the other. So it was a bit of a mess, but they fixed that now. So it's all in one place. It's in the Cinnamon control panel, and it works wonderfully. What doesn't work wonderfully is, of course, Skype. And again, I don't know whether this is Skype, whether it is the Linux kernel that's upgraded on 16 that was different on 15, or whether it is some combination of Microsoft trying to mess with the Linux folks, because I know Skype gave you problems on OpenSUSE, and it's given other people problems on Ubuntu, and of course it's given me problems on Mint. And the solution appears to be the same for everybody, and that is to change the latency settings for Skype. And you do that in the launcher itself, in the application icon that launches Skype. And we have that particular setting in our Google Plus community post, one of the posts there. I think there are 3 or 4 posts. And you just change that setting, and it seems to work just fine. I found another link as well to another thing that might help people with optimizing Skype a little bit. And I shared that in the Google Plus community as well. And between that and the latency setting, I think everything should work just fine. Okay, so that's irritation number one, if you will.
Okay.
So that's an irritation, and I'll blame that on Microsoft.
It seems like the new versions of Skype have been giving Linux, any Linux, trouble. It's not as pain-free as it used to be. So I'd have to say, yeah, let's blame Microsoft on that.
Yeah, well, all of these problems that I've had with Skype have occurred since Microsoft acquired them, so I'm just drawing the conclusion that's sitting out there to be drawn, right? It's okay. Microsoft
so
messing
with it.
So
what's irritation number two?
Irritation number two. Well, I use, for audio, sometimes I use the speakers that are on the laptop, and sometimes I use a USB headset like the one I'm using right now. And everything works just fine. Audacity works fine for recording, and I can switch between the speakers and the USB headset, and I can even switch it over to my USB mixer if I want to. And as I'm watching videos or playing audio in the Firefox browser, it will use whatever is set as my default in the sound settings. But if I go over to the Chromium browser, if I switch my default to the USB headset, anything that's playing in the Chromium browser plays on the laptop speakers. If I switch the default to my mixer, anything that's in the Chromium browser plays on the laptop speakers. So something isn't working the way it used to work, and I'm going to track that down. Maybe it's the different version of the Chromium browser, because I think the one in the repositories for Mint 16 are different from the one in Mint 15. So I'll track that down and figure that out and fix it. I just haven't done that yet.
Sounds like there's a few little glitches. Now, you don't think it's Skype's problem. I mean, you don't think it's Mint's problem. You think it's mainly Skype.
For the Skype problem? Yeah. I really do think it's Skype. And the reason I think that is because it's not just a problem on Mint or on Ubuntu. It's a problem on just about every version of Linux out there, whether it's Debian-based or whether it's an RPM distribution like OpenSUSE is. So, you know, I really don't think it's Linux.
They keep trying to incorporate more services, you know, because Microsoft wants to be a services company now, and they keep trying to integrate Skype into their operating system. It's just there, you know.
Yeah, well, so, one of the things they're doing, or they have done, is they have changed Skype from a peer-to-peer audio sharing and video sharing system, where your computer connects directly to my computer over Skype, which is the way it worked before Microsoft took them over.
Okay.
And now what they've done is they've taken every communication that you make over Skype goes to a Microsoft server.
Ouch.
Yeah, so, you know, all the NSA jokes aside, they've changed fundamentally the way Skype works. And I believe that that change has not done any favors for Linux users of Skype. So anyway, that's basically what's going on with Mint 16 in my world. And maybe by the time we record the next episode, all of those things will be behind me. But,
why don't you just send your laptop to me and I'll fix it for you?
Oh, sure.
Permanently.
Okay. I'll never get it back, right? It'll have PC Linux OS on there in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. It's as quick as I can slap it on there. So I'm going to convert you to PC Linux OS soon.
I don't think so.
You're going to be wearing a 10-gallon hat and everything.
Okay.
All right, before we rat hole this thing right into the ground, so let's go ahead and start and actually talk about something constructive. So what is today's episode going to be about?
All right, so we're talking about dual booting. And of course, in our episode 227, we did an introduction to dual booting. And in that episode, we covered a number of different introductory type things, introducing what dual booting is, why it's important to you, and why you might want to do it in the first place.
Larry, as we found out in the introductory episode, setting up a dual boot computer doesn't have to be difficult.
That's right. You just insert the DVD, choose the right option, and let it run. We even mentioned an alternative method of installing Ubuntu and some Ubuntu derivatives called Wubi. And Wubi, again, for review, is the installation method for Ubuntu that allows you to install Linux effectively inside of Windows.
But they're not actively supporting it anymore.
Right.
We had a listener named Richard who mentioned in our Google Plus community that Ubuntu 12.04 LTS will be the last version that will be able to be installed using Wubi.
Right.
Support for Ubuntu 12.04 ends in 2017, and the most recent version of Ubuntu is 13.10.
Right. And we also heard from listener Christian confirming that Wubi support is discontinued because of UEFI.
Okay, so it seems like we've covered the basics. What's left to discuss in this advanced episode, Larry?
Well, some people might feel that they want to maybe control the amount of space their new Linux takes up on their hard drive, or install Linux onto its own hard drive, or maybe just have more than one other OS on their computer. In other words, have it multi-boot. We talked a little bit about that in our introductory episode. So they might want or have to partition manually. So in this advanced episode, we're going to take a look at how to do that.
Oh, okay. Well, while we were looking for, and doing research for this episode, we ran across several tools that are available.
Yep.
And it depends on your distribution. And let me give you some examples. And the first one that I ran across was GNU Parted, or AKA Parted.
Right. And that's a command line tool, right?
It's a command line tool. And then we have FDisk. I'm sure everybody's heard of that one. And then we have CFDisk.
Right.
And that's very similar to FDisk, isn't it, Larry?
Yep. Yep. Okay. Very, very similar. Yep. And we'll have actually a link to a Wikipedia article that lists some of these. So we can have you follow along. And it also lists partitioning tools for Windows and Mac and other things as well. But we've just, in this list we're going through here, we're highlighting the ones for Linux.
Oh, okay. And then, of course, we have GNU-FDisk.
Of course, we have to have a GNU slash something.
Of course, GNU is our friend.
Yep.
And then we have Python Parted, and I've never heard of that one, but it showed up when I was looking, so I thought I'd throw it in there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever used that one?
I have not used that, but I'm thinking that it may be something that you would use as a tool when you are developing Python programs, or perhaps it allows you to access the Parted partition editor, if you will, tools through Python.
Okay. And our last command line program is called GPT-FDisk, or aka GDisk. And it happens to be cross-platform, so you can use it on Linux, OS X, FreeBSD, and even Windows.
Yeah, so that's that I found interesting, that this GDisk thing is cross-platform. And I didn't realize there was a command line partitioning tool that actually worked cross-platform. So Nightwise, if you're not aware of it, this is something for you, I think.
Well, we were covering command line tools, but where would we be if we didn't cover ones that have a nice graphical user interface?
Okay, what have we got there, Bill?
Okay, we've got GParted, and it's usually installed with GNOME, and they call it the GNOME Partition Editor.
Right.
Most anybody that's run GNOME has seen it. It's usually installed by default. Then we have the KDE version of it, and it's called KDE Partition Manager, or Partition Manager. And then we have another one called QTParted. Then we have GNOME Disk Utility, a.k.a. Disks, in Red Hat. That's what they call it, Disks.
Right.
Then we have Disk Druid, which is from Fedora, and Disk Drake from Mandriva. And just a side note, I believe that PC Linux OS uses some of the old Mandriva tools.
Ah, so they have Disk Drake in PC Linux
OS?
Yeah,
they have Disk Drake.
Okay.
Because they branched off from when it was called Mandrake.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then we have a one that you paid. It's called Parted Magic.
Right. Yeah, Parted Magic is one of those tools that I think there's Partition Magic on Windows. It's mm-hmm. it's meant to sound the same, I'm sure. And you do have to pay for it. I think it's $40 US or something like that. But when you've got all these free tools,
why would you buy it?
Yeah, why would you buy it? Well, especially since I think most of these are based on the same thing, aren't they?
Yeah, I think if I'm not too badly mistaken, they're all based on Libparted, the library.
Yeah, so a lot of these are either command line front ends or graphical front ends that all use the same libparted functionality in the background. So,
even the paid one?
Yeah, from what I understand. Yeah, I'm not sure that they all do, but most of them do.
Well, this goes to show you that if you don't want to get a free program, you can always pay for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And, you know, some Linux distributions installers actually present a manual partitioner during the installation process, and I'm sure they use that same libparted library to do that. And I've noticed that the partitioner presented in this situation is usually the one that's the standard for that distribution. So if you're installing Ubuntu or Mint or any of the Ubuntu derivatives, they're going to be using gparted because that's the one that is installed on the live DVD. And after installing Mint, for example, after you've rebooted into your installation, you'll find that gparted is not installed by default, but it is when you're using the live DVD. So it is something you have to go to the repositories and get if you want to continue to do partitioning after you've actually installed Linux Mint on your computer. And I think it's been a little while since I've used Ubuntu. And when I did use Ubuntu, I remember that being the case for them as well. I think they probably have that same situation these days.
Well, the interesting part is all these programs, they've made a lot of leaps and bounds as far as being able to do a lot of it, as we like to say, automagically.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw the whole control and say, just do it. Just accept and you're done. Or you can do it manually. So you can kind of step your way up. You can start and you know nothing. And as you become more and more confident, you can say, well, I want to use a different file system. I want to set up a different partition scheme. So these tools can actually grow with you. The most of them have good documentation, and they have usually communities of people that can help you if you happen to get stuck. This stuff is almost as good or better than some of the commercial stuff out there.
So, yeah, these tools are very, very good, and using a live DVD or a live USB stick with a partition editor on it is an excellent tool to have if you're managing computers or setting up computers for people. If you're a computer tech at all, this is one of the kind of tools that you want to have available to you. And, you know, whether you run it on Windows, Mac, or Linux as your base operating system, having it on a live DVD or a USB stick is just an invaluable tool to have.
Now that we've talked about the different tools available to us to do the partitioning and so we can get Linux installed, we've covered the basics. Can you kind of go over what a standard installation would be and then maybe how things, you know, can change, like for different partitions and stuff?
Okay, so let's just pick one of these graphical tools and let's kind of walk through it.
Okay.
So, Bill, we're going to talk a little bit now about doing manual partitioning of a hard drive. And the reason we're doing that is because perhaps somebody might want to dual boot their computer, and they may have Windows already installed on there, and they want to make some room for Linux, and they want to manually install the space, manually set up the space, because perhaps they want to put on maybe more than one additional operating system, and or they might want to control the amount of space that they take up with Linux as opposed to letting the installer in Linux choose the settings for them. And we know that you can do that kind of manual partitioning during the installation setup on many Linux distributions, but we thought we would show how to do this before starting the installation so that you can use a graphical partitioning tool to do this.
We like graphical.
Yes, we do. Okay, so what we have in our setup today is we have Peppermint 4, and we have installed on Peppermint 4, or it plugged into Peppermint 4, a 100 gigabyte external drive that we're going to be using to partition. And you can see on this external drive, we have Windows already pre-installed. And you can tell it's Windows because it's got Documents and Settings, an I386 folder, and a My Documents folder, and a bunch
of... quarantine file.
Yes, and a bunch of other stuff on here that's kind of weird looking to people who have used Linux forever. But that's the drive we're going to partition.
All right.
And one of the things that makes partitioning a hard drive so confusing to people, and why most people will just let the Linux installer partition the drive however they feel, is because there are so many choices, as with many things Linux, there are so many choices as to how to partition your drive. So we actually have in the show notes a link to an article that is on How to Geek. In that How to Geek article is how to choose a partition scheme for your Linux PC. And they're using examples from Ubuntu there, of course. And what we're talking about here will apply to using gparted as your partitioning tool of choice. So some of those questions that people have are things like, I've got no idea how to do this. And I've heard that you can have a home partition and a swap partition and a boot partition and a root partition and some other partitions. What do I need? What size should they be? How many do I need? Do I need them all? You know, those kinds of questions. And we hope to be able to answer those questions here today.
All righty.
Okay. So first thing you need to do is, if your Linux distribution doesn't already have gparted installed, or some other partitioning tool like KDE Partition Manager or Qt Parted or DiskDruid or DiskDrake or even Parted Magic, if you want to use that, you need to go to the repositories or the software center or software manager and install it. So if I put in my password here for the software manager, and again, this is Peppermint OS. Mm-hmm. And so they're using the Mint software manager here. And I just search for gparted, or you could also search for partition managers if you wish. And you see, I've already got it installed as indicated by the little green check mark here. But if you wanted to install it from here, this button in, if you wanted to install it from here and you didn't have it installed, this button would say install. You would click this, little progress bar would go across here, and once you've got it installed, you can begin using it.
No, looks like it's got some pretty positive reviews.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, and in Debian-based systems, it will usually show up under System Tools menu or something like that. Here it is right here, gparted. And Bill, tell us why it's asking us for this password here when I run this.
Well, because we're getting ready to make changes to the system.
Yeah, exactly. So whenever you make system changes in Linux, you are required to put in your password to confirm that you are you, that you have access to this computer, and you have permissions to actually make this change. So the
very important.
Yeah. So, I said that this system had Windows installed in it. ext4 is a Linux file system. Why is this showing up as ext4, Bill?
Two different hard drives.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. So we've got the Windows drive hooked up to this computer by way of USB. So this is my default hard drive that I actually have Linux installed. So Peppermint OS is installed on the SDA drive, and you can see it's a 500 gigabyte drive. Now, if I switch over to SDC, I probably had another USB drive plugged in at one point, probably my flash drive that picked up B. So now it's SDC. And I can tell the difference between the two, not only in the letter, but also in the size. And if you recall, I said it was a 100 gigabyte drive. So here we are. This looks a little more like what it should. So we've got an NTFS drive, which is the Windows file format. Mm-hmm. And here it is here mounted at this point. And I can see that it has 34 gigabytes of used space. So Windows is taking up less than half of the space, and we've got about 60 gigabytes left. Now, should I use all 60 gigabytes for Linux, Bill?
Well, the correct answer would be let's get rid of Windows entirely. If you don't want to, you can partition it. It's depending on what you want to do.
Right. So my thought here is if you want to continue to use Windows, you're probably going to want to leave a little free space in order to continue to be able to save data to your Windows partition or install additional programs to your Windows.
And updates.
And updates, yes. Updates take a lot of space sometimes as well. So you do want to leave some free space for Windows to be able to operate if you want to continue to use Windows. So we probably can use half of this hard drive. We can probably use 50 gigabytes, but let's just give Windows a little more room because it's a bit of a hog in space. And let's just say we're going to use about 30 gigabytes of space. Does that sound about right?
That's kind of close, but okay. I mean, for this practice, I find that you probably want to add at least 10 more gigabytes onto anything. So if you think you're 30, go 40. But that's because Windows is kind of a big pig when it comes to programs, and it likes to have duplicate files. And you know, I've seen a 2 gigabyte update from Microsoft, so it's just more the merrier.
So what you're saying, Bill, is right now Windows is using about 35 gigabytes of space. We should probably add another 10 to that and allow it to use 40 gigabytes of space for Windows and the remaining space for Linux.
That's what I would recommend.
Okay. So if I say, let's give it 50, and let's give Linux 50, that adds a little more safety margin. So let's actually use half the space. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So one of the things that you need to realize when you're first using the partitioner is that in order to resize the partition, you must have the hard drive that you're using, the partition that you're using, unmounted. And you can see from the display that we have the NTFS partition mounted here. So we first thing we want to do is unmount it. So in the partition editor, you can select from the graphical display, or you can select from the list of partitions. Either one does the same thing. And then under here, you'll see the menu says partition, and there's a selection for unmount. If this were already unmounted, that selection wouldn't be there. Step number one is make sure you're using the right drive. And step number two is to unmount that partition.
And the reason you want to unmount the partition is you can't work on the drive until you unmount it.
Right.
Because it's being used.
That's exactly right. So you want to unmount that partition. And that's one of the reasons why you can't dynamically change the partition size on the drive that we're using on SDA, because we're using it for Linux. Now, if we had a different volume manager installed, like LVM, which I think is what OpenSUSE uses by default, you can do partition size changes live. Probably not a wise move, but you can.
Well, OpenSUSE and Fedora seem to be leaning toward the LVMs.
Right.
Yeah.
But unless you have that in your standard installation of just about every other Linux distribution, you're going to want to unmount the drive before you start partitioning.
Yes.
Okay. So we have a separate drive. We have unmounted it, and we're going to use about 50 gigabytes of it for Windows and the remaining 50 gigabytes for Linux. So right now, about all of the hard drive space is taken up with Windows. And we can tell it's Windows because it's formatted NTFS. So now, what's our first step here, Bill?
So far, we've made sure we had the right drive.
Yep.
We've unmounted the drive so we can actually work on it.
Yep.
Now, we need to set up the new partitions.
Right. So, first step is to make the Windows partition smaller. So, let's do that.
Okay.
So, we'll go to, we first select the partition we want to make smaller, go to the partition menu, and select resize. So, okay, so now it says free space preceding, new size, free space following, align to, let's make this easy.
The easiest way to do this is you can just grab and manually adjust it.
Right, so I go to the right-hand side, and I drag this until it's smaller. And you can see we can drag it bigger, smaller, and I said I want to make it about equal. So we'll make it 40. Let's make Windows a little bit smaller than Linux. There we go.
Linux needs more space.
Yeah, because I'm going to be using Linux a lot more than Windows. So in the 95 gigabits of space that is available on this partition, we've got about 47 for Windows now, and we've got 48 for Linux. That seems fair.
Yeah. We're number one.
Number one. Okay.
Yeah.
So now I will click the button that says resize / move. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now it looks like I've got two sections, the Windows section and an unallocated space over here on the right.
But you don't yet.
So tell us about that.
Well, right now it's what we call proposed changes. So you see there's a little arrow that
right here
says it says apply all operations.
Yep.
And when you click that, then it will actually make the changes to your drive. So this is basically you propose the changes, you make sure everything's set right, make sure that you're on the right drive, because you know I've actually formatted the wrong drive before. multiple times. And so once you make sure everything's the way you want it, then you hit click apply all operations, and then it writes the new partitions to the drive.
Right. Okay. So, and it's going to keep track of what our process is down here on the bottom. And you can see we've got one change, one proposed change. And it says right here on the bottom, operation pending, which is good because we haven't committed anything yet. So there's an undo button here, which allows you to undo that last operation if you want to. So if you make a mistake as you go along, you can actually go back until you press the button that says apply all operations. Then all bets are off.
Yeah. So you make sure that you, there's no rush. So take your time. It's not hard. It's just, you just got to make sure that you have everything set right. You know, you've got the right drive. You've got how much space you want. You know, take your time. And it's pretty much foolproof.
Right. Now, what we want to partition is this unallocated space here. We've got 47 gigabytes of space that we want to allow Linux to be installed into. And with the Mint installer or the Ubuntu installer, if you let it go ahead and do its own partitioning without manually partitioning it, it will create a boot partition and it will create a swap partition. And all of your home folder information will be in the same partition as the Linux installation itself. And one of the reasons many people will want to do manual partitioning is they want to have their home partition or the files in their home folder in its own partition. So let's take that approach.
There is another reason that you want to do a manual partition over an automated is, for example, I like to choose what type of file system I use.
Right.
So, so when you're doing the manual, you can actually have complete control over what type of file system that you want to write.
Right, exactly. So let's just do that. So let's take it relatively simple. We'll have a boot partition where we will install Linux, the operating system and the operating files, if you will have a separate home partition so that the documents that you create will go into that partition and will create a swap partition. The minimum you need is a boot partition. You don't have to have a swap partition, but it is recommended that you have a swap partition, depending on how much RAM you have and whether or not you have an SSD drive as opposed to a spinning hard drive.
Drive space is cheap.
It is. And so the reason for the swap partition is, if you're used to Windows, this is what they call the paging file in Windows. And that's where information that's stored in RAM that's not going to be used immediately. And if you're running out of RAM to store stuff in as you're using the operating system, it will put some of that information that's in RAM onto the hard drive temporarily, kind of swap it out of RAM to make more room in RAM for the things you're actually doing. And then it will recall it back from the hard drive and put it back in RAM if you actually need that. So that's what the swap partition is and does. We recommend that you have at least a root partition and a swap partition, but we're going to add a third one, a home partition as well. So how do we do this, Bill? I selected the open space here. I just clicked on it. What's next?
Okay. Once we've got the space so we can add our partition to it, just going to select new.
Okay, so we've right-clicked on that space, and we'll select new. Yep.
Okay, and you're going to come up and it's going to say on the title bar, create new partition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first one we said we needed was the root.
Yes.
Okay, so how much do you like to make your root partitions, Larry? How big do you usually write it?
Well, let's think about this. So Linux, depending on which distribution of Linux you choose, you may be minimum 4 gigabytes of space used up by Linux. I've seen as little as 3 and as much as 6. So I'm thinking if you kind of double that, you're going to look at maybe 10 or 12 gigabytes of space for the Linux installation itself for the root partition. Does that sound about right?
Well, I usually, I like even numbers. Mm-hmm. So I usually just put it to 20. Plenty of room to grow. It just seems to work.
Okay. So in our case here, we have about 50 gigabytes of space. If we make it down to about 20, that's a little less than half the space for Linux itself, right?
But that's, you know, but since we're using a smaller, you know, we broke up a small drive, we can get away with, I would say, 10 to 12. If this was a, you know, a big drive and we had plenty of space, I would say go ahead and 20. But since we want to keep as much space for our program and stuff, let's go ahead and make it 12.
Okay, so we'll make it 12. So if you want it exactly 12, you can type into the little field here, but I'm just using the graphical thing. Okay, so what we'll have is our root partition here. And what determines whether it's root or not is first we have to make it a primary partition.
Yep.
And then we choose the file format. So we've got lots of choices here.
You want to, until you know what the each one of them does and the benefits, you can't go wrong with ext4.
Okay, so let's choose that one. That's the one that Debian distributions choose by default. And I think for some of the other RPM-based distributions, they may choose that as well. They may choose Riser or something else, but they're not going to be choosing NTFS, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And before we go any farther, there's, if you look in the box, there's a little empty box that says label.
Oh, okay. Right here.
Yep. What you want to do is you want to put slash and then root. And then you're going to click add.
Okay.
Okay. So now you're looking at the results of your making your first partition. And you'll see that it says ext4.
Mm-hmm.
And where it actually shows that it's the root. The label actually shows up. And that's basically there so you know what each one is and stuff. It just kind of helps.
Yeah.
Now, you notice that we still have some unallocated space.
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and we're going to I'll click on it and create new again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go ahead and create our swap now.
Okay.
And so, Larry, how much RAM does this laptop have?
I don't remember, so let's go find out. I think it has 4 gigabytes. Let's go to, where do we go here? System tools. Here we go.
Yeah.
Task manager.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go, and we have about 3 gigabytes of space.
As a general rule of thumb, I like to take what RAM we have and double it and say, so if we have 3, I'd like to have 6 in swap.
Okay. So now, if I drag from the left, it's mm-hmm. going to put the swap space next to the root partition. If, on the other hand, I select the handle on the left and move it to the right, it's going to make a space over on the right, leaving space between root and the swap. Is there a preference, or does it matter?
There's people that say it makes a difference. Other people say it doesn't make a difference. There's really not a definitive answer. Whichever way you want to do it, as long as you have a swap.
Okay. So let me put the swap partition right at the far end. And the reason I want to do that is because I may add more RAM to this computer later, and I may want to change the swap partition size. And I just find it a little easier to do it if it's on the end of the drive, if you will. So the size that I'm looking for is 6. So let's see. New size, 6 gigabytes is about
there,
close enough.
Now, you're going to pick a primary partition.
Okay, it'll be a primary, not an extended partition. Yeah.
And then you're going to pick Linux swap. It tells the computer that that's a swap space.
Right.
Now, you don't have to, but since we're labeling, just go ahead in the label box, put /swap. It doesn't hurt to have labels. And now, click Add.
There we go.
Okay. Now, we've got our root, we've got our swap, and sitting right in the middle is basically 29 gigabytes of free space.
Mm-hmm.
And this is real easy to do.
Okay.
What you're going to do is you're going to highlight it,
mm-hmm.
right-click it, new, and change the file system to ext4.
Do we want an extended partition or no?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, so we'll leave it as a primary partition. EXT4 for storing our data.
And down to label it as home.
Okay.
And hit add.
That's it.
We're done.
Okay. Actually, we're not done, are we?
Well, no, we're not. But we're done setting up the partitions.
Right. And
okay.
One thing that you can see is that it's done the different file formats in different colors, so you can quickly and easily see visually that the root partition and the home partition are going to be ext4. The Windows partition, of course, is NTFS. And the swap partition is the Linux swap file system format.
And you see, as you're looking at gparted, that everything's labeled. So you see where the root is, you see where the home is, you see where the swap is, you see where the NTFS is. Things are color-coded. So now you can visualize how everything looks, and you can make sure that it's set correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Larry, there's a button that you got to hit to make these changes.
And that would be this one here, apply all operations. Okay. Are you sure editing partitions has potential to cause loss of data? You're advised to back up your data before proceeding. And if you haven't backed up at this point, cancel all this and do your backup, because we are messing with the infrastructure of this hard drive. And if you don't have a backup of at least your data, you risk losing it at this point. So,
and you can't blame me.
Exactly.
We accept no responsibility if you lose pictures of your wife, child, or dogs.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so I'm going to hit apply at this point. So there we go. And now it gives us a little progress bar. Mm-hmm. If you want to see the details of what it's doing step by step, you can expand that little section and you can watch it go through each of the different things that you asked it to do. If that's not of interest to you, you can leave it collapsed and just watch the progress.
Sometimes, depending on the drive size, it'll take a few minutes. That's a good time to go get a cup of coffee, get a drink, go to the bathroom, whatever, and then come back.
Yep. So we'll just let this run, and we'll be back in just a few minutes to see the final results of our partitioning efforts.
Yay.
So now that we're finished with the partitioning, you can see that we have four partitions. We have the original NTFS partition for the Windows, and you can see there's a little bit of extra space there for us to be able to continue to use Windows. We have the primary partition on our hard drive, which is the partition for our root. And then we have another primary partition on the far right-hand side, if you're looking at it on the screen right now. That is our Linux swap, so that we can allow information in RAM to swap into this on the hard drive. And finally, our separate home partition, where all of our data that we create while using Linux will be stored.
Yeah, I would like to... you mentioned something that I want to just point out. You said it's been a long time since you've had a separate home partition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason I do that is that say that you want to do a fresh install of Mint. Say your Mint is causing problems. You can write the changes to the system files and not touch the home, and everything will still be there.
All your settings and permissions and all that stuff.
So I know some people that they will change whole distributions. You know, they'll have like Ubuntu and they'll go to Debian. Well, they'll leave their home partition alone and they still have all their files and stuff. Now, there are some little niggly things that, you know, you have to clean up, you know, different, you know, you get a little crazy settings and stuff, but nothing you can't fix.
So, right.
And it also makes it easier if you're going to be doing as many reviews of different distributions. I always make sure I have a good backup copy of my home partition.
Right. Yeah, and it's a little more applicable if you're upgrading the existing distribution you're using to the next version and you want to do a fresh install, but you don't want to have to mess with your home directory and reinstalling applications and then copying over from your backup the profile settings and so on. That way, typically, you don't have to mess with all the niggly things, as you called it. But if you're actually changing from one distribution to another, especially if the distribution has a different philosophy on where third-party software is to be installed, you will have things that will break, and you'll have to reset where the permissions are pointing onto your home partition. But it's a nice way to be able to not have to restore from backup your home partition after you do a fresh install of one distribution to the next version of that distribution as opposed to upgrade. So if your distribution doesn't provide an upgrade path, you may want to do that. Or if in the case of Mint, where they do provide an upgrade path, but if you're like me, you're not sure that that's all that reliable yet. I always do a fresh install, and having all your home settings in a separate partition can save you some time. You just install to the root partition and then point to the home as your home folder.
You'll find out as you do more of these setting up your different partitions and stuff that Linux is very flexible to your needs. You'll have more choices on how to do things than you ever have with OS X or Windows. And it's not a bad thing. It's just the way things are. So you can really make it your own. You can tell it right down to, you know, where you want things stored, you know. So That's why you truly know how to fix your computer. And if you can do this, you're on your way to understanding how things work.
Yep, exactly. Okay, and that wraps up our instructions on how to do manual partitioning. And we also now have a new segment for our show. Yes, we do. Normally, what we've done at this point in the show is have an application pick, and we discuss that pick between the two of us. And we've done that sometimes both on the listener feedback episodes and the user experience episodes as we're recording here today. So on our user experience episodes, we're going to replace that segment with a new segment. It is called Hacks, Tips, and Tweaks. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll recognize that phrase as something that fellow podcaster Nightwise uses all the time. It's a catchphrase for his podcast. So if you're a regular listener to our show, you'll know that fellow podcaster Nightwise at nightwise.com is a cross-platform slider who is always providing hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks on his show.
And he's a good friend of our show, too.
Yes, he is.
Nightwise has provided a few of them for us in the past. Like us, many of our listeners use more than just Linux on a daily basis. So we thought you might want to try some cross-platform goodness. On a monthly basis, Nightwise will be providing us some cross-platform goodness. And so we asked him, and he's agreed. So you're going to be hearing a lot more of this, and I'm kind of excited about it.
I'm looking forward to it as well. And by the way, Nightwise's tips may be cross-platform or specific to Linux or specific to Android or maybe even specific to Mac or Windows. But regardless of the tip that he provides us with, the information is always entertaining.
Thanks, Nightwise. Here is the month's Hacks, Tips, and Tweaks segment.
Hey, Larry. Hey, Bill. This is Nightwise from the Nightwise.com podcast calling with a tip for people just wanting to get into Linux. Getting started with Linux is not always easy because of things that you need to learn. I mean, if you are switching from Windows or the Mac, or you're using all three operating systems at the same time, like sliders do, having the skills to do advanced stuff like tweaking the hardware and looking for drivers is something that doesn't always come naturally. I remember this from my own experiences. You know, you're getting into Linux and you go like, oh, wow, it's exciting and it's new and my wireless doesn't work. And then when you need to get those things working, there's this enormously steep learning curve that has you grepping the dmessages log and downloading packages and compiling stuff from source while you're still looking for the button that gives you something that looked like the start menu. So what I found is that there are a lot of some options out there for people who are just getting into Linux to get a machine that they will probably get working right out of the box and get playing and give them the ability to start playing and using Linux right from the start. Because once you use an operating system and you get used to it, you learn. And once you learn, you have the ability to troubleshoot said operating system. But having to install a video driver 10 minutes after you first installed Linux is like taking apart the engine of your Ferrari once you've driven it down the driveway. So, not something that you want. What I've found from experience is that there are some brands out there that have excellent hardware support and are still decent and affordable kinds of laptops and desktops. The brand I'm talking about is Lenovo. Lenovo, also known as IBM. They used to be IBM, now they're Lenovo. They have a great line of ThinkPads out there and sometimes even desktops. I think they're called ThinkStations or something like that. I forget, but they have ThinkPads out there, which are, you know, a variety of laptops in a variety of sizes and a variety of CPUs and specs and God knows what, but they all have one thing in common. They all run Linux out of the box flawlessly, at least for most distros. A couple of months ago, or last year, I bought a second-hand Lenovo ThinkPad Edge, which is an 11-inch i3 machine, 11.6-inch screen, an i3 processor, and 4 gigs of RAM. And it's a really nice machine to run Linux on. I ran 12.04 on it, Ubuntu 12.04. And the great thing with these Lenovos is that once you've got them installed, everything works. The audio works, the wireless works, the Bluetooth works, the keyboard works, everything works. And I really like that experience, because one of the things that I do after installing a distro is, of course, go and look if I need to install any proprietary drivers. And what I've noticed is with Lenovo, there are no proprietary drivers. All the drivers are open source and well supported, and your machine works right out of the box. The second reason why I like them is because they are of a very high quality, especially the more professional models in the Lenovo lines are really, really sturdy. I mean, they have a nice keyboard, they have a sturdy case, they are to be called ugly sometimes, but they have their own quirky style. Most of them come both with a keyboard knob, what's it called, and a touchpad, and they're really decent stuff. I mean, I've had laptops from various brands, and if you take a low-end HP or a low-end Acer and compare them with a Lenovo, there is a significant gap in quality between the two. Now, I know that these things are not cheap. IBM or / Lenovo ThinkPads aren't really very low budget friendly. But because they have such a high quality, they're around for a couple of years. And you can find quite a few of them on Craigslist or secondhand and still have the guarantee that this laptop, even after 2 or 3 years of use by the previous owner, might still have at least a year of life in it. It all depends on the hardware specs, of course, but what I've noticed is that the hardware itself, you know, like the keyboard and the screen and the hinges of the screen, tend to really be able to, they're really able to stand the test of time and usage, extensive usage, and still after a couple of years have some life in them. The best story I have about this is that I am currently still supporting a Lenovo ThinkPad or an IBM ThinkPad. It's a T41, which is a Centrino machine. And the original owner bought it, the owner that I know bought it secondhand, and he came to me, and this was 10 years ago. He came to me and said, I bought a secondhand laptop, can you help me install it? Back then I installed XP on it for him, and he used it for quite some time. Then he retired it, but because he has a business, he said, can I use it for my business? I reinstalled the machine with Linux as a narrowcasting system, basically displaying a PowerPoint presentation in his shop. It has been doing that, and I have reinstalled it since 2 times with newer versions of Linux. Currently it's running 12.04, and it's been running for 10 years. So for 10 consecutive years, I have been using, I've been supporting this machine. I've only had to reinstall it, I think once with XP and 3 times with different versions of Linux. And for the last, let me guess here, 8 years, it has been on, powered on, doing that very simple PowerPoint presentation nonstop, and it's still growing strong. It still has life in it. By now the screen has started to go just a little bit, so we hooked up an external monitor, but it is in a quite a dusty environment, so I have to clean out the fans every year or so. But it has been running consecutively for 8 years. This machine is 10 years old, so it might be a good tip for you listeners who want to get into Linux, you know, dip your toes in, just start using it, and are looking for a good new or second-hand machine that will support all your hardware drivers, but also will give you the ability to do a purchase that's a little bit budget friendly and will keep you going for the next couple of years. For Nightwise.com, the podcast with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks, this was Nightwise.
Well, if you like that, we'll have another one next month. And if you can't wait, head over to Nightwise.com and subscribe to the audio stream, the video stream, and the Nightwise.com blog. He's got lots of this kind of information on a regular basis.
You know, just because the jet engine falls on his house, we can't get rid of him now.
That's, I mean, he's a great guy.
We're still paying the installment plan. No, seriously, Nightwise is a great guy. I love Nightwise, and he's got a good sense of humor. If you're looking for a good podcast to listen to, give his a whirl. Yeah, the next thing you know, he's gonna have his own radio station.
So, our next episode, Bill, is our regular listener feedback episode. And as always, until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles, show notes, and contact information, as well as links to download and subscribe. We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux Podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.